Got a bump off. Are you afraid of the dark? The tale of the sinister statues. Now, this was a series of books based on the SNCC TV series. This one kind of went backwards from TV to books, which is a definite lowering of the standard that I don't really approve of. In the show and in the book, there's a wraparound where a bunch of kids would get together in the woods and one of them would tell a spooky story initiated by throwing flash powder on a campfire they all sat around. They called themselves the Midnight Society, and while this is great and total fantasy for kids, I can't imagine a bunch of kids getting together and actually doing this. There's no way a kid would do this kind of homework on the regular. You can barely get a kid to do 15 minutes of math worksheets, let alone coming up with an entire narrative about a haunted laser tag or whatever. Hell, you can't even get adults to come to a writing workshop with 7 pages every other week. The Sinister Statues book starts off with these 3 kids. They hit the museum, and one of the kids starts drawing mustaches on a bunch of the old statues. The museum curator catches him and is pissed, and I'm very much team curator at this point. This little dickhead is using a marker to draw mustaches on ancient art, and the other kids are like, "It's no big deal, they'll wipe right off." Seriously? And even if they will, what gives you the right to deface or reface statues? I think one good thing about museums is that they're so fucking boring that for the most part, influencers don't do stupid shit in them, right? Or am I just not being exposed to the right wrong kind of influencers? Are there people doing stupid dances in front of the prairie dioramas at the museum? Man, what becomes of diorama makers in the age of AI? Before, I guess this was the best way to depict the average caveman's life or whatever. But now it's like 10 minutes of work for someone with rudimentary knowledge of cavemen and boom, you've got a CG image that pretty much does the job. Certainly as good as the paper mache stuff they're always making where the boulders never look right. The museum curator does the thing where he's like, "Because you deface these statues, kid, I'm going to make you work for me for the rest of the day." Which probably doesn't happen in real life, right? If I caught someone carving swastikas in a library book, I wouldn't be like, "Now you'll come shelve books for the rest of the day." Because am I supposed to trust this person who has clearly demonstrated they don't give a fuck about books to shelve them properly? And even if they were striving to do it right, it's a ton of work on my part to monitor and sort of train them. This seems really stupid on my part. I'd rather they just pay a fine or pick up garbage on the highway. Thanks and all that. I mean, even if you fucking pick up trash and you fuck it up, we're not really worse off. Maybe this is what fostering youth is all about. But you know what? There's another thing I don't like about it. Why is the punishment for defacing a statue doing my job? That implies that I'm doing my job as punishment, which I sort of am. It's the punishment I receive for renting a home and wanting to visit a doctor once a year, and I guess driving a 25-year-old car. If I didn't have such lavish tastes, maybe I wouldn't be getting this punishment for 40 hours every week. Through a long series of events. Seriously, this one starts pretty good and then drags through the middle. We discover that the evil Dr. Stone, who's the curator, has a machine that's turning real people into stone statues and simultaneously turning stone statues into living people. So you could put like Michelangelo's David in one chamber, a kid in the other, and boom, you'd have a statue of some bastard kid and then a living version of David. There are a lot of questions that go answered in this, and I would say there's at least one for each of the who, what, when, where, why, how. Why would someone even begin the process of pursuing a device that does this? What utility does this have? I'm not like a all scientists are playing God kind of guy. I'm all for cloning organs and shit, but what purpose does bringing a gargoyle to life serve, really? What was this scientist doing that led him down this road and made him even consider this possible? How do you build this machine? I watched Oppenheimer, and although I do not know how to build an atomic bomb, I do understand that if I had to, the way I would go about it is to find a bunch of super smart scientists, preferably with somewhat odd taste in hats, and throw them into the project. Who is this guy's boss? This person must have some kind of boss, or at least similarly placed on the org chart colleague, who would be like, bro, are you making a bring stuff to life machine? Because that's not really what we're supposed to be doing here as museum curators. When a statue is brought to life, how do they adapt to the modern world so quickly? Does this story imply that statues are always kind of alive and aware, so they have watched things happen, or is this just magic or some other thing? Where do you get the parts for such a machine? Where do you build it? I barely have room to build a bookshelf in my garage, let alone a device with two chambers, one of which has a huge statue in it, the other a live child. I do, however, sort of like that the curator is kidnapping jerk-off kids who fuck around with museum exhibits and bringing statues to life using them. He's almost like a vigilante Robin Hooding life from the wicked and giving it to the statues. If they took the biggest dickheads out of my elementary school and gave their lives to statues, I would not have been super upset about that, honestly. So the guy has a few creatures and a couple guys he's brought to life from statues, and then our main kids are about to be turned into statues, but the curator first brings Anubis to life from a statue, and Anubis turns on the curator. So apparently the statues have the qualities of the people they're modeled after, which I guess makes as much sense as anything in the book, so it's hard to knock it. The idiot curator brought to life an Egyptian god who's known for being super judgmental, and then he's like, oh fuck, I blew it for myself. Anubis forces a Greek guy statue to turn back into a statue, freeing our vandalizing friend, and then the curator gets statuized. I think so Anubis can continue to walk the earth and, I don't know, bring justice to people in highly ironic ways. What we fail to mention in the book, though, is that there are still a couple statues roaming around that didn't seem to get turned back. So in theory, there are still a couple kids who are statues that'll never get turned back because only this one maniac knows how to use this machine, right? One might be a cat, which, okay, if a cat can turn into a statue and bring a human to life, I'm not the biggest human rights advocate here, but wouldn't that be much easier than kidnapping kids? It wouldn't be terribly suspicious if a leather elbow-be-patched museum curator had a bunch of cats. And no one's going to be like, what happened to your cats? Overall, Are You Afraid of the Dark is a show that I loved. Twilight Zone for kids. As an adult, it's a bit of a rough watch, if I'm honest. It's so cheap and so Canadian. Are You Afraid of the Dark premiered about 2 months after the first Goosebumps book hit the shelves, so it seems like there was something in the air in 1992 that had everyone making horror media for kids, because it's not like one possibly ripped off the other, being that close together. They were definitely in production at the same time. The book itself, actually pretty good, pretty readable. It seemed like maybe the disbelief period on this one was on the long side, and there was quite a bit of wheel spinning, and I think a better book would have just been much shorter and spent less time screwing around. But I'm sure these sorts of things had a lot to do with publishers saying something like they had to be X length. Goosebumps all seem right around 120 pages. And then that way people felt like they were getting a good value for $3.99, which would be $8.95 today. I kind of see their point. If a kid read a book in 30 minutes, people might feel a little ripped off. But on the other hand, I'm the sort of person who would rather read a shorter book than a longer one that's too long. Or like an album. Some people complain about an album's length, like 30 or 40 minutes, back when we used to buy CDs, but I'm of the opinion that I'd rather have that short album than one with four extra crap songs as filler just to make it of a good length. Or Chex Mix. The peanuts and pretzels don't take on any flavor dust, so it's just like bag filler. Pumpernickel chips, baby. That's what gives us all boners.
Beware, you're in for a scare.